Well, good morning. It is a joy to be with you here this morning. About a year after I was here with you the last time that Pastor Kathy was gone for part of the summer, and I have been eagerly anticipating being back with your community. That was a beautiful intro into this time, and I have to say that was completely not in my control. That was not my choice. I was told that that's what would be leading into the sermon, and I was simply... what's the word for it? Thrilled is not right, but touched. I was very touched because Psalm 23 is a psalm that has been sitting with me, sitting in me for the last week or so. About a week ago today, I was at a memorial service for a beloved family member, and that psalm was read. And that's not unusual for Psalm 23 to be read at a memorial service, but it sat with me. It hit me in a different way this time. You know how sometimes you'll hear the same thing? You've heard a lot, but you hear it differently, or you hear some pieces louder. And the part that I heard in it that time was how it describes the experience of encountering death. Not dying necessarily, but the experience of encountering a death in our world as a physical place, walking through the valley. It's a geography that you can enter and pass through. And that really caught me because it feels like that, doesn't it? Grief, the experience of loss when someone or something dies, it is, it's an experience so unique, so enveloping, that it literally can feel as though we have walked into a strange and distant land. It is almost as if we silently cross this threshold of light and emerge into a darker, more mysterious place. I love this image for that. You see this man. I know some of you may not be able to see it as well in the back, but there is a man who is, his body is still in this land of light and green things and growing, but he's bending forward through this threshold and looking out into this dark, mysterious something. And there's a word for this. It's a word that we don't hear a lot. I'm someone who has spent time in seminary and then spent time doing a counseling degree, so I've read and thought about some things sometimes that I realize I don't do a lot of reading and thinking about in the rest of my life, but there's a word that has come up there for me that I've been grateful for in describing times like this, and I'd like to share it with you this morning. That word is liminal. It's not a word that gets used much, but I think it's a beautiful word, full of meaning for our lives. Liminal comes from the root limen. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, so stay with me. Limen, it means threshold. So a liminal experience is that which is, you have left one place, but you have not quite yet entered the other. You are between the thresholds. You are in the place of the no longer, but not in the quite yet. It is this unnamed, undefined time. Probably the best way that we can describe it, the words that we use for it the most, are times of transition. It's times that we just experience ourselves not in the place where we have known ourselves to be, but not quite in the next secure space. It's a time that, frankly, we're pretty uncomfortable with most of the time, but it is also a space of profound possibility for transformation and growth and change. The theologian Richard Rohr describes liminal space in this way: a unique spiritual position where human beings hate to be, but where the biblical God is always leading them. It is where you have left the tried and true, but have not yet been able to replace it with anything else. It's when you are finally out of the way. It's when you are between your old comfort zone and any possible new answer. If you're not trained in how to hold anxiety, how to live with ambiguity, how to entrust and wait, you will run. Anything to flee this terrible cloud of unknowing. Liminal experiences, in truth, exist on all levels of life, from the very concrete and practical, like being between jobs, or being in a pregnancy, or basically every single one of the teenage years, to the deeply abstract, like a sense of spiritual ennui, or an identity crisis in life, which I think is really what Moror is talking about there at the end, that sense of anxiety, that sense of not knowing how to hold it. Because of the uncertain nature of liminal space, we tend to try and minimize or ignore them as long as we can, to the extent that we can. But of course, the more concrete they are, the harder it is for us to ignore them. And in some ways, we sort of feel okay about that, because we like dealing with concrete things more, typically, than the abstract. It feels like there's a clearer to-do list when you're up against a concrete task. They feel more controllable. And when you're in a liminal space, what we just, as human beings, like is a sense of control. But in truth, with liminal experiences, even when there is a concrete expression of them, the truth is, on a deeper level, there is always a spiritual reality to them. There's always a spiritual aspect of what's going on. And perhaps the more concrete it is, the more we can kind of ignore that other part. But that is to our detriment, because we will constantly be called back into that space where God is trying to pull us. I have a hard time, in truth, giving a sermon without using a poem from the poet Mary Oliver. She's one of my favorites, and she, happily, has a poem that I believe illustrates this to some extent that I'd like to share with you. The title is Starfish, which is what she will now describe. In the sea rocks, in the stone pockets under the tide's lip, in water dense as blindness, they slid like sponges, like too many thumbs. I knew this, and what I wanted was to draw my hands back from the water. What I wanted was to be willing to be afraid. But I stayed there. I crouched on the stone wall while the sea poured its harsh song through the sluices, while I waited for the gritty lightning of their touch, while I stared down through the tides leaving, where sometimes I could see them, their stubborn flesh lounging on my knuckles. What good does it do to lie all day in the sun, loving what is easy? It never grew easy, but at last I grew peaceful. All summer, my fear diminished as they bloomed through the water like flowers, like flecks of an uncertain dream, while I lay on the rocks, reaching into the darkness, learning little by little how to love this, our only world. Can you recognize the different liminal spaces that Oliver is in this poem? She very physically is between two worlds, lying, I imagine, on her belly, on the edge of the land, reaching out into the sea, on the threshold between these two different spaces. But more importantly, she is in between in the states of her mind and heart. She's moving from disgust to familiarity and peace. And isn't this something that we are called to constantly in our lives? That God constantly calls us to come up to those places where we find that we push away, that we don't like it. And yet it is still a part of God's creation, whether it's a person or a starfish. And finding a way to make peace with that. Oliver often writes about transforming experiences in places that are off the grid, way out in nature. And in this way, she's very similar to a lot of the biblical authors, because the Bible is full of stories of people in liminal spaces, which is often signified by their going out into the wilderness, an undefined place, a place where clear guideposts or points of orientation are missing. More to the point, perhaps, a place where the very clearly constructed expectations of our social lives, of our families, of the ways that we typically interact with the world, that they are all missing as well. We are not in a place in the wilderness that is defined by the rules of what was. There are also notably times of transformation. Examples of this that immediately come to mind for me from the Old Testament are that Jacob was wandering in the wilderness when he had his experience of wrestling with God and was renamed Israel. And the Israelites came out of slavery and wandered in the wilderness before eventually coming into the Holy Land as God's people. The wilderness is where we find Jesus in our text for this morning, not coincidentally. He has left the places of what was known, of what was decided. He has come into this space, and we hear in the text that it was a challenging time, a time where he was confronted with the lack of basic needs, survival needs. I mean, in terms of, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of what we need at the most, Jesus is right there at the bottom, not having food to eat. And in some ways, this is very true of liminal or deeply transitional experiences. Not that we are missing food, but that we experience a sense of fear around our survival. Something in us has a feeling, a fear, that we might not survive this, or that some part of us might not. Perhaps we aren't sure that we'll know how to navigate life in this new place when not everything in our lives has looked just like it has before. And to some extent, this is a pretty real fear, because the truth is, as we move through the transitional times in our lives, something doesn't survive, does it? The image that I carry with me around this is of a woman in labor. After her baby is born, her old way of being in the world will never be exactly the same. It might be similar, there might be many things that look and feel and work the same, but on a fundamental level, life has changed, and it will not go back. And though we think about this as a celebratory moment, often, perhaps not always, it is also a loss. There is the loss of the life in the way that it was. But there is also something new that has been born. And this is a painful and a scary time. But what gets us through that is the hope of what is to come. And this is the same with us as Christians, that in liminal, in very transitional moments, our challenge is to trust in the hope of what grace can create instead of leaning into the fear that arises from what we know we will lose. When we're in liminal spaces or spaces where we're uncertain about what is about to happen next, our tendency is to allow fear to consume and motivate us. And fear wants quick answers. Fear wants certainty, concrete solutions. But there is nothing new or hopeful or transformative about concrete. That posture of fear is too rigid to learn how to adapt or open itself to new possibilities. So going back to the text, in the wilderness, Jesus is offered immediate and concrete answers to the problems that he is facing through all of the temptations that come his way. And traditional interpretations of this text tend to focus on resisting temptation. But I believe it is about courage. I believe it's about the courage to believe that God's grace is more powerful than the dangers that our fears concoct. The larger the issue, the more our fear is usually able to do with it. And the issues that we see addressed in this text are large indeed. We are told that Jesus is hungry, and so he is offered food. What person who has been hungry for that long would not take it with the fear of what will happen if I don't? That one is very clearly spelled out. The others we sort of have to read into the text, but I think it's really right there. The next temptation is of sovereignty over nations. And this is another, it's a perfect example of where someone goes in a transitional space like this, because we tend to feel very out of control, right? Like the things that we're used to being able to manage in our lives aren't there. And so all those trappings that we have around ourselves, those illusions of the powerful people that we may be, suddenly aren't as much in evidence. And that is then attended to by this offer of sovereignty over all the nations. You don't have to feel powerless. Look at how powerful you can be. The last one, I think, goes the deepest. Because when we are in spaces like this, when we are in the in-between places, the truth is we can feel very alone. It can be a very, very lonely time, perhaps even leading us to feeling abandoned. And so then comes the temptation. Show that you're not. Cast yourself down, and angels will gather around you and show you, prove to you, that God's love abides around you, even still, that you are not alone. Jesus does not give in to fear in these moments, but remains open and grounded in the love of God. And not coincidentally, immediately following this chapter, he begins his ministry. This passage in the wilderness was the time that transformed him from the child that we read about in the earlier chapters of Luke, full of unrealized potential, to the man living into that potential as the Son of God, teaching us what it means to live into salvation. Now, it's a moment of confession for me. If you're like me, you can read and think about texts from the Bible and think that's beautiful and that's lovely, or sometimes that's very confusing, but then have difficulty taking that and then seeing that exactly where that plays out in the world. What does that look like? So I'd like to share a brief story with you that I think captures a lot of the same feeling and meaning. It's from a man called Tex Sample, and Tex is a white man from Mississippi who decided to go to seminary up in Boston. And this was back in later middle of the 20th century. Tex has joined the civil rights movement and has come back down to Alabama for a march. He writes, "Because I was tall and bigger than most, I was asked to walk on the outside of the march on the right side. Someone told me, if somebody's going to get hit, we'd rather it be somebody your size. It was not a comforting thought, and I remember complaining to myself that the demonstrators seemed to be terribly small." I should say, Tex is about 6'4", so everyone is small to him. "As the morning wore on, I noticed the very humid spring of Alabama. My Mississippi blood had thickened up, as those New England Yankees would say, and dressed in my Boston clothes, I began to feel the heat and get quite hungry and thirsty. As inspired as I was to be there, and scared, I might add, I was nevertheless focused more on food and drink than anything else. I looked up the line, and coming our way, that is, against the flow of the march, was a black woman. She had on a print dress that had endured too many washings and well-worn shoes. She was very poor, I thought to myself. But in one hand, she had a stack of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and in the other, a gallon jug of red Kool-Aid, strawberry, as it turned out. I don't know why, but when she got to me, she shoved those sandwiches into one of my hands and that jug of Kool-Aid into the other. Then she looked up at me and said, 'Hey, brother, we're gonna overcome.' I was dumbstruck. I uttered some kind of 'thank you,' and looked down at the sandwiches and Kool-Aid. When I turned to say something else, she had disappeared into the crowd. I took one of the sandwiches and passed the others to the person on my left, cradling the plastic jug on my bent elbow while snaking my index finger through the handle. I lifted it above my head and took a long drink. I felt proud that I knew how to drink from a jug. When I passed it on to that same man on my left, it hit me like a brick. 'This is my body broken for you, and this is my blood shed for you.' I chilled for the next quarter of a mile." Certainly, the civil rights era in our country was a time of great communal and cultural liminality, a time that God was leading us out of where we had been as a nation and into the unknown. A time of hope, a time of newness in what would eventually become the continually ongoing struggle that we have with race relations in our country. It was an in-between space characterized by great upheaval, by unrest, uncertainty, and profound transformational possibility. And for many in that time, there was much of it, I think, that must have felt almost unbearable. Because spiritually speaking, we are creatures that are made for transformation, but our more human selves really, on some level, gravitate towards what is predictable and what is known, the certitude of steps already taken. To be in a space like that requires someone or some people who are able to hold the tension of the time, hold the anxiety, and continue to bring forth the spiritual truth of the hope that resides in that moment. The deeper and more profound the transition, the greater our need for someone to hold that or something to buoy us. And folks, we know we're in a transitional time now, don't we? We're in a time when we are changing as a church. We are in a time when we are looking to new leaders for our country. And certainly all of us in our own ways are in moments of transition throughout our lives. So the good news here is that we are never without that buoy, that thing that lifts us. It's called grace. It's called God's love pervading our lives at all times, including most of our lives when we simply seem to not recognize that it surrounds us. We seem to notice it most when we are in times of loss and uncertainty and need to reach out and find it. The bad news is that we can be totally blind to it, typically through our fear, because there's nothing in this world that stands more directly in opposition to the experience of grace than fear. Fear narrows our vision, it tightens our bodies, it creates the illusions of walls in front of our eyes. I'd like to say that it was possible for us to somehow rid ourselves of this experience, but the truth is, as humans, it's not possible for us ever to escape an experience of fear in this life. It's simply built into part of who we are. But as Christians, we are given every encouragement not to choose it, but to choose faith in the grace that abounds. It's a lovely sentence to say. It's an incredibly difficult thing to do. Because even in and of itself, it is a frightening choice. It's a frightening choice to step into faith in the thing that may not yet be seen, in the blindness of a path, when we have a very concrete fear that we feel like is right there with us. Thinking of this always brings to mind, for me, a scene from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, a movie that some of you may have seen, where Indy is needing to rush to get the water that's going to save his father, who has been shot. And I'd like to show you this clip, if I can.
From the lion's head, the ape of his mirth. Impossible. Nobody can jump this.
Indy! And you must hurry! Come quickly!
It's a leap of faith.
It must be. Rush. Believe.
I think my favorite part of that scene is at the very end where he grabs the sand and then he has to throw it there, right? Because it's just so humanizing. Even after we have seen, we've seen that we're not going to fall, we still need to have the proof that it's still there, right? Like he has to cast that so that he can believe it again. You know, we will never find ourselves exactly in Indy's position there, but all of us will find ourselves at the end of a place, unsure of how to get to the next place, or perhaps even what or where that place is. We'll find ourselves, metaphorically speaking, sitting at the edge of a cliff in life and wondering how to get to that next land. And while in this picture I think it's beautiful, it also can feel totally stuck, aimless, fruitless, even despairing. It can feel chillingly solitary. When the transitional space you find yourself in is not chosen, it can feel raw and rough. But there are also times that we can choose to step into a liminal space. Finding experiences of awe through art or music or experiences in nature are such places. Placing yourself in sacred areas, perhaps through prayer or meditation or coming to worship, are others. Appreciating beauty in the world around you and feeling transported from the mundane nature of life is another chosen experience of the liminal. These are liminal because we are taken out of the space that we usually inhabit, the normal nature of life, and we are lifted somehow into a different space. There is deep grace in these moments. A grace that can open us to newness within ourselves, help us discover a freshness of spirit. And these are important moments that help fill our reservoirs of soul that we then draw upon in trying times, which will come because, like Jesus in the desert, our most transformative times tend to come through the times of trial. But even in those times, grace abounds. The grace of sandwiches and Kool-Aid, the grace of community, the grace of the courage to keep your hand in the water. And the more we're able to find a way to release our fear and take that step, the sooner that grace becomes apparent to us. To close, I'd like to offer you a chosen liminal space. Granted, it was chosen by me, but I hope you will enjoy it. It's one of beauty and peace. Having entered this reflection time through the threshold of the 23rd Psalm, we will close it through the threshold of the same, an interpretation done by a group of a cappella singers led by Bobby McFerrin. And you may not be able to see it as well. Some of you in the back, I'm not sure, but you really don't need to see what's on the screen for this. You could just close your eyes and listen.
Beside Amen.